Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Eleanor Cohn and Bessie Hyman are interviewing Dr. Leo Kreep on November 11, 1976, at his office at the Bigelow Apartment. Dr. Kreep, tell me about your family, your father, your mother.
Well, my father decided many years ago that due to the social and religious situation in Romania, it was time for him to leave. And so he came to this country, and my mother taught school in Romania. She was quite an artist. She did a lot of artwork, crayon work, and was a very fine woman. I learned from her the value of compromise and tolerance.
What was your father's name?
Herman.
And when was he born?
I can't remember, but he was 72 when he passed away, and he passed away, I guess, about 20 years ago.
And your mother's maiden name? What was her
name? Gertrude Zuckerman. And she was 80 when she passed away, about 20 years ago.
Did you have any sisters or brothers?
No.
You were an only child.
Right. Unfortunately.
What was your home life like? Tell us something
well,
about your home.
Well, it was a closely knit family, a small family. We had very few relatives in this country. Some relatives in Philadelphia, where we originally settled. That's where my father settled originally, because his sister lived in Philadelphia.
When was that he came to Philadelphia?
1908 or 10, thereabouts. Father was in, had a very growing and fine business in the old country, in the grocery business, wholesale grocery. And when he came here, and mother and I followed him about 6 months or 10 months later, he opened a small grocery store in the Jewish district of Philadelphia, the Keller district, really, on Jefferson Street. And he had quite a time making ends meet. I remember this little grocery catered to people who were not too well to do. And those were the days where people used coal to heat their small apartments and housing gatherings. And he and I helped carry buckets of coal up to coal, one or two or even three flights of steps. And this kept up for a matter of maybe 8 years, and I went to school.
Did he sell the coal to the
yes,
people?
Yes, that's right.
From his grocery.
Then he came to Pittsburgh.
Was it a very religious home?
No, not particularly religious. I remember Father used to take me to the synagogue on the high holidays, and but he did not follow any strict religious program.
Did were there a lot of books in your house? Did he read a lot or
Mother
use a lot
did
of music?
A lot of reading, and the father was strictly speaking a businessman.
Was there much discipline?
Well, it was the old family type of discipline, which did not indulge in permissiveness. I was taught to follow whatever I was told to do, and I found invariably that that worked out very well. I didn't always agree with what I was told to do, but I simply was trained to do it.
Were you you were born in Romania?
Right.
Where?
In Iasi.
How do you spell it?
I-A-S-S-Y.
When?
Second largest city in 1896.
And do you remember anything about your life there?
Yes, I remember a great deal. We went to school. I remember going, well, I had a Hebrew education. A rabbi would come to the house, and that used to take up time for my playing time, and I resented it. I remember this kept up for a number of years. It was a type of teaching that was not very fruitful. I would sit at the table, and the rabbi would sit, or the teacher would sit right across from me, and I would kick him over under the table, and he would hit me over the table. And when Father got home, I used to get a licking for not behaving. This kept on for a matter of about 10 years. And the result of this kind of teaching is perfectly apparent, because today my knowledge of Hebrew is practically negligible. So that's one thing I remember. The other, I remember the stress and strain that we were under in primary school, where there was so much discrimination. And it was not at all unusual, I even remember a teacher, for him to show hatred and contempt for the Jewish kids in the school.
Were there many Jewish children in that school?
I don't remember, but there were probably about 15 to 20%. I remember we were rather well off, and I remember somebody carrying the books for me going to school. Had to make quite a change after we got to this country. I remember having a very dear friend, a Gentile friend, schoolmate, and I recall how we were friends away from his home, but we could never get to or into his home.
Could he come
to our house?
He could come to your house.
That's right. So the discrimination was remained indelibly impressed on my mind. It's quite a change. To this blessed country.
You were permitted to go to school there.
Oh, yes.
What type of...
We wore a uniform at school, and the teaching was nothing to brag about, but the punishment, the stress, the strain that we were under, obviously interfered with learning.
What type of punishment?
Well, they discriminated against the Jewish kids. They had to sit in the back row, and very much alike to what the Negro has been through in the South here. Only it was much accompanied by much more hatred.
I don't think you told us the month of your birthday.
May the 23rd.
May the 23rd. Is there any teacher in particular that you remember there that you'd like to talk about?
Well, yes, I remember this man that I referred to. I remember
your
his
Hebrew,
name.
You mean your Hebrew teacher?
No. Oh. The teacher in school, because he was so vulgar and so common and so obnoxious that he left an impression that I just can't forget.
When you came to Philadelphia, what school did you go to?
I went to, well, it was an irregular type of enrollment, because they gave me credit for whatever teaching or education I had, and of course I couldn't speak English. So I went to primary school, and I attended several classes.
How old were you?
Well, let me see. Well, I arrived in 1910.
1910. About 14.
About 12, 14. 12. Then when I came to Pittsburgh, I went for a short while to Fifth Avenue High School.
Had you gotten?
On informal enrollment, and got transferred to the high school on Bedford Avenue. And I recall we had a teacher, our classroom teacher, Dr. Lewis, was a converted Jew. And after my experience in the old country, he was a very decent and a very fine and a very nice gentleman, a good teacher of Latin, but I resented him because of his conversion.
Did you, you graduated from?
Yes, from high school, Bedford Avenue.
Bedford Avenue High School.
They called it Central High School.
They called it Central High School.
It then transferred to Shelley High School, but that was before my time.
Where did you go to college?
Good, University of Pittsburgh.
And what did you major in?
Well, I took the pre-med course.
Which was how many years?
Well, they had a 6-year combined course, 2 years of college and 4 years of medicine. And 2 years of college were primarily intended for admission to the School of Medicine.
In other words, you intended to go into medicine when you started.
Right. Well, I knew I was going to go into medicine even before I got into college.
When did you know you were first decide to be a doctor?
Well, as a matter of fact, when I was a child, I wanted to be a locomotive engineer. And then as I got a little older, I began to become interested in animals. And then I had my mind made up when I was in high school that I was going to go into medicine.
Tell me about the medical care when you were a child.
The medical care in this country?
In your home.
Even in Europe.
And in Europe. What happened when you were sick?
Well, I remember very little about medical care in Europe. But the medical care in this country, in Pittsburgh, in the Jewish community, that is, the community that I was in, was very, very poor, left much to be desired. You see, that was the time when the Marfa Hospital was up on the hill. It was a small building. It had very few facilities. The Jewish doctors had no access to medical education, I mean postgraduate education. They had no access to hospital appointments outside of the Montfort. And the result was that, while it's difficult to generalize, most of the physicians that attended the community up on the hill were not, by present standards, very competent.
What happened if you were sick while you were in Philadelphia or here?
Well,
who took
there was
care
no
of?
Problem. It was easy enough to get a physician such as it was to make a house call.
And when you came to Pittsburgh, was it any different than the health in the
It's about the same.
While you were growing up, when you were adolescent, what did you do for recreation or for fun?
I didn't have time to do much for recreation because we were really not very well off. We lived on small, I'm talking about Pittsburgh now, in a small apartment on Overhill Street up on the hill. And I worked while in high school. I remember working for a tailor supply place. This was an individual who catered to tailors selling buttons and whatever it was. And I used to deliver this stuff to tailors all over the country, McKeesport, Pittsburgh, every place else, by streetcar. And then when that was finished, I used to work at nights for the Postal Telegraph Company, which is now the Western Union, delivering messages and gifts and things of that sort. The only recreation that we had, and this held good for most of men who are now professionals, was the Iron Cotton Settlement, which was a blessing. I recall very clearly, we had two debating societies, the Gateway Club and the Duquesne Club. And some very prominent men belonged, for example, Ben Lynchard, who was a judge of the Peace Court, belonged to the Duquesne Club, several others. And then we'd have debates. And Rabbi Levy, who whom I remember very well, whom I have a tremendous amount of respect, would come once a month on Friday evenings to the Iron Cotton Settlement. There we were, 20 or 30. Can you imagine that? 20 or 30 youngsters, avid for learning and very combative and very provocative, challenging him to prove to us that there was a God. And Rabbi Levy would sit through the thing and talk to us.
Is it Dr. J. Leonard Levy?
Yeah, Dr. J. Leonard Levy. As you know, he was a magnificent speaker. One man that's a better speaker Rabbi Levy, and that's Rabbi Friedhoff. That was our outlet. And then, of course, through these outlets, we would have picnics. We'd get in somebody's home in Aspinwall that had a lawn or a little bit of a garden, and on a Saturday or Sunday, we'd go out on a picnic, and we'd prepare for 2 or 3 weeks for the picnic. And that was the sort of life that we lived.
Why did your father come to Pittsburgh?
Well, things were very bad, as I said, in Philadelphia. And one of our distant, my mother's sister, that was it, was married to a man who was in the mantle business. In those days, they used mantles for gas lights. And he thought it would be a good idea for father to come and join me. And that's how he happened to give up this very unrewarding business in Philadelphia and come to Pittsburgh. And it was quite a struggle for a number of years.
Did he work with his relative?
Things didn't go well at all. Such as it was, worked out all right, considering.
Is there anything else you can tell us about your adolescent years that was very interesting about?
Well, that really was the scope and extent, as I recall, of we were limited because we didn't have the time. And the Iron Copper Settlement, as I said before, was a blessing, not only in regards to what I'm talking about, but when I got through college, that is, the second year, at the beginning of the second year in college, there was a fund. I'm not clear about that. I think it was run jointly by the Iron Copper Settlement and the Temple for giving money, not loaning money, giving money to students who wanted to go on with their education and didn't have the wherewithal. And I was fortunate enough to be eligible for, whatever the reason was, for tuition to the medical school. And they paid my tuition throughout, I don't remember now, the 2 or 3 years of medical school. The last year I think my father was able to handle it.
What about the first 2 years of college? Were you able to?
I'm not clear. I think they paid the whole business. And when I was through, after my third or fourth year, when I returned from my postgraduate work, I paid it all off. I was delighted to have the opportunity to do that, so that others may. Now, I don't know if this fund still exists, but I rather suspect that it probably does exist. I don't know.
You didn't know the name of the fund.
But I know it was run jointly by the settlement and the temple.
Is this for members of the temple, particularly, would you think?
No, not a member.
No, I mean, was it the people who belonged to the temple eligible for this, since it was a gift and not a loan?
I don't think that had anything to do with it. I don't think the membership, I was not, of course, a member of the temple.
But you were a member of the Irene Kaufman settlement.
Yes, sure, for many years.
Was it because you were a member that you got it?
I think it was through the Iron Cotton Settlement that I had access to this. I don't know that the demand for this type of philanthropic activity is as intense now as it was, because the youngsters today have no anxiety about the future. Very self-reliant, and somehow they manage in one way or another. This is just an impression, but in my day, you either went to school and you either had the money to go to school or you just didn't go to school. That's how it was thought. For example, today there are government loans that are available. And all you have to do is ask for it and you get it. And these government loans, many of them, you can repay, and nobody's going to worry if you don't repay.
Will you tell us about your courtship?
Well, as you know, I was too busy and too involved with whatever I was doing to think of marriage until, just like the measles, when it gets you, you just simply fall for it, and that's all there is to it until I met Merla. And it was a very interesting type of thing because, in school I belonged to a medical fraternity. Now, those were the days. The situation has changed in the past 8 years, where fraternities were either Jewish or non-Jewish, and the Jew never had access to a non-Jewish medical fraternity. The admission to medical school was, of course, very restricted. We only had about 5 or 6 Jews to in a class of 80 or 85, and I became very active in the medical fraternity because it was my identification with Jewishness and Jewish medicine, in a sense. So social activities during medical school were attached to and part of the fraternity. I can't belong to an organization without being very active.
What was the name of the fraternity?
Phi Delta Epsilon Fraternity, a national fraternity with some 12,000 members throughout the country.
Were you an officer in the fraternity?
I was president of the local chapter. I was president of the graduate club after graduation. I was president of the board of trustees for a number of years thereafter. So that was... Oh, well, we were talking about courtship. So every once in a while, fraternity would have a dance. And somebody would always try to get you fixed up with their cousin or their niece or their sister or somebody like that. And experience taught me that I'd do better by simply going to these social affairs unattached. It didn't present any problems. Well, this was a special affair which was held because I became president of the graduate club. And I have to have somebody. So I found out Esther Margolis, and she gave me a choice of either taking a girl who lived in Carnegie or one who lived in Squirrel Hill. And I made the choice on that basis. So that's how I met Merla.
When was that?
You ask me very embarrassing questions because I usually have to call up Merla to find out dates. About 4 years ago, I guess. I'm guessing now, don't hold me to that. About 4 years ago, and I paid the call on Merla. She told me afterwards she realized that the reason I called on her is because I wanted to see what I was getting before the next. Well, anyhow, that's how the thing started, and as I said before, the things that this sort of thing just catches on like the measles, and it's been a very fortunate and very happy marriage since then.
After you met her, was it long before you became engaged?
Well, I would imagine 6 or 8 months. I got married maybe a year later.
When did you get married?
Yeah, well, I have to ask Marla these things. I'm ashamed to tell you that I don't remember. But it was in 1942. I think that's pretty close to the date.
Have you any children?
Yes, we have a boy and a girl. Susie is now married.
To whom is she married?
She married to a boy by the name of Santa Cruz, who was from Chile, but he had worked here in this country for about 10 years for U.S. Steel, and she met him at an art gallery. And Leo, who is 32, graduated from medical school, and is now in practice.
Do you have any grandchildren?
Yes. One grandchild, Susie's child, Caroline, who's 4 years old. She's the center of attraction activity at present. I had a wonderful, tough weekend. I took her to the ballet on Saturday and to the circus on Sunday. And I haven't been to a circus in my life.
And they live near Pittsburgh?
Yes.
Where did you live when you were first married?
You mean before married or after married? We lived at the Cathedral Mansions. Had an apartment there waiting for our house to be built on Melbourne, where we stood there.
What is the address on Melbourne?
1212 Melbourne.
Tell me a little more about your children. Where did they go to school?
Well, Susie, you went to Winchester here, and thereafter she graduated Vassar, majoring in art, history of art. Unfortunately, I kept on insisting she go into commercial art, because she really is gifted. And of course, history of art doesn't offer many opportunities, you know. Leo graduated Yale and then was admitted to a shortened course, one of 14 students to be admitted to Hopkins Medical School, shortened course. And at the end of the first, close to the end of the first year at Hopkins, he decided in times of war he should be in the army. And I need not tell you what we went through. The dean, everybody at Hopkins that could get to him, tried to talk him out of it. But he volunteered and he got in the army against my better judgment. But fortunately, he was given a plush job in Fort Baker in California, and he was there for 3 years, working on his time off in various capacities. He was a detective at the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco. He did all kinds of odd and end jobs, but that's what he did. And then when he returned from the Army, Hopkins wouldn't have him, because it was a terrible thing for him to do, because he displaced, he took the place of another student. The places in medical school were not easy to get into. So he applied to 4 medical schools. He wouldn't tell me which ones, but he thought, although I didn't have any influence, he thought I might have influence in getting him in. He was accepted to 2 schools, and of his own choice, he picked Pitt. And he didn't get into any difficulties after that. He graduated Pitt, and then he served his internship and a 3-year residency at Montreal Hospital, which is, as you know, part of the health center.
Where is he now?
Well, he is interested in rendering service in rural communities. And needless to tell you, I would give my right arm to have him take over this setup here. But he's up in St. Mary's, which is about 150 miles north of here, in a community of 5,000, in a hospital of 100 beds, run by nuns. He and another boy, who is similarly motivated, have the nuns open an office for them. He's in charge of the emergency room. Well, I think that as long as a young man is happy in what he's doing and does what he wants to do, not that I could get him to do anything else, that's all that one can expect, and one should be very happy with that sort of thing. He works terribly hard.
I'd like to know more about your career as a doctor. You had no other career other than part-time jobs, is that correct?
No.
But tell me from the beginning.
Well, medicine is a jealous mistress. You have to be dedicated and devoted, and it does not permit you really, I'm not offering this as an excuse, but as justification for my not being active in communal affairs, unless you want to consider the Montreal Hospital as a communal affair.
I was most interested in your career as a doctor.
Well, it started out, of course, with the training that I had. When I was finished with my internship, I interned at the Pasadena Hospital, because in those days it was not easy for a Jew to get even an internship at any of the hospitals. I remember taking the exam at West Bend Hospital. The exam was really intended to keep Jews out, or to admit only a few Jews, and I flunked that exam, so I picked the Pasadena, which was a very fortunate, it had a great deal to do with my professional development, and I had no part in it because I didn't have any choice. So after interning there, it so happened that the chairman of the Department of Medicine at the medical school was active at the Pasadena, and he asked me to I would be interested in joining the faculty of the School of Medicine. And that was quite, I don't think that he just must have liked my name or something, because really didn't know too much about my ability. And Dr. Fisher, who was a nose and throat man, was on the faculty of nose and throat, and I was the first Jew to have an appointment at the medical school on medical school faculty in the day when full-time teachers in medicine were not available for the clinical departments.
What did you teach?
Cardiology with Dr. Hurd. Dr. Hurd was a cardiologist in those days. As a matter of fact, the best known cardiologist in Pittsburgh.
As soon as you
finish
your internship,
that's right.
You went right to
the... Right. I opened an office on Center Avenue, right near Dinwiddie Street, not Dinwiddie, but up on the hill. And Dr. Hurd took me on in his department. And the year after that, well, 2 years after that, thereabouts, Sir Thomas Lewis, who was the pioneer in the world,